is Friday, September the 28th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you here. Coming up, what it takes to confirm a new U.S. High Court justice.
This is a political question at this point, and I think that those members of the Senate on the Republican side realize that this issue is about the midterms and about the general elections that will be coming up 2 years after that.
Is a nuclear deal possible with North Korea?
I think we will make a deal. But unfortunately, to ensure this progress continues, we must enforce existing UN Security Council resolutions.
Also ahead, the Tesla founder is sued by the U.S. government, and then a little something from the world of music. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. We begin with the story that is dominating the news here in the United States. The biggest broadcasters and cable news networks cleared their daytime schedules on Thursday for coverage of the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing involving High Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford, who accuses Kavanaugh of sexual assault when they were high school students in the 1980s. We get more now from VOA National Correspondent Jim Malone.
With a Supreme Court nomination hanging in the balance, Palo Alto University professor Christine Blasey Ford gave emotional testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee.
I am here today not because I want to be. I am terrified. I am here because I believe it is my civic duty to tell you what happened to me while Brett Kavanaugh and I were in high school.
With a national audience looking on, Ford detailed an alleged sexual assault by Brett Kavanaugh when they were both teenagers in the early 1980s.
I believed he was going to rape me. I tried to yell for help. When I did, Brett put his hand over my mouth to stop me from yelling. This is what terrified me the most and has had the most lasting impact on my life.
Ford told senators she is 100% certain that Kavanaugh is the man who assaulted her as one of his friends looked on, and she was asked about her lasting memory of the incident from long ago.
Is the laughter, the uproarious laughter between the two, and they're having fun at my expense.
After Ford's testimony, nominee Brett Kavanaugh appeared before the committee and offered an emotional and defiant statement of his own, denying Ford's allegation.
I'm not questioning that Dr. Ford may have been sexually assaulted by some person in some place at some time. But I have never done this to her or to anyone. That's not who I am. It is not who I was.
Kavanaugh said his name and family have been permanently destroyed by the allegations against him. And he angrily lashed out at Democrats for what he said was a smear campaign aimed at denying him a seat on the Supreme Court.
This whole two-week effort has been a calculated and orchestrated political hit, fueled with apparent pent-up anger about President Trump and the 2016 election, fear that has been unfairly stoked about my judicial record, revenge on behalf of the Clintons, and millions of dollars in money from outside left-wing opposition groups.
Ford is one of several women who have raised complaints about Kavanaugh, some of whom have gone public, but others have chosen to remain anonymous. Outside the hearing, protesters both in favor of Kavanaugh and opposed to his confirmation made their feelings known. Senators must now weigh the testimony from both Ford and Kavanaugh, the fate of President Trump's Supreme Court appointment hanging in the balance. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And for some perspective on all of this, VOA's Lori London speaks with criminal defense attorney and former CIA operative Jack Rice.
We've never seen anything like this in a very long time. But one thing that I look at now, and it's very clear, is that Dr. Ford, honestly, was credible. She was. And I think even the Republicans grudgingly said that. I think what we also found out was it doesn't particularly matter. It appears that they're going to be able to push this through and they're going to be able to vote. I guess there's one other issue, though, that is important. Not only were we talking about the potential nomination and confirmation of the next U.S. Supreme Court justice, but also about the midterm elections. Nobody said that. But that was also the underlying question that was going on today.
She, many people are saying, seemed very credible. What about Judge Kavanaugh? He seemed at times to get pretty aggressive, particularly towards some of the Democratic senators that were asking him questions.
What stuck out to me regarding Judge Kavanaugh's testimony today was a question of temperament. Normally, what one would expect in this process is somebody who is even, who would apply the standards as they see them, and they would address the issues. What we saw from Kavanaugh was actually something far more aggressive. In particular, I think of one exchange between he and Senator Klobuchar out of Minnesota, where he kept asking her whether or not she drank and how mm-hmm. that worked. And he kept pushing on the issue. And that's simply not something you would ever see from a judicial nominee ever.
Right, to turn around and ask the lawmaker questions, to try to sort of throw it back in their face.
And he did this over and over and over again, and this is one of those things that you just wouldn't see. And so this question of temperament is really something that shocked me. And frankly, his opening statement did the same thing to me. We saw sort of the flip-flop from real intense anger on the one side to almost weeping on the other. Now, that doesn't mean that he can't be emotional. I'm not saying that. But his willingness to sort of lay that out there as clearly as he did is something that we, generally speaking, do not see from a judicial nominee at the federal level, let alone at the U.S. Supreme Court level.
A lot of the senators on the Democratic side were asking Mr. Kavanaugh, Judge Kavanaugh, if he would recommend that this whole thing go to the FBI for an official nonpartisan investigation. And he just seemed to refuse to answer that. But would that be more proper protocol than what the way they've been doing it? Or what is the most ethical way to handle this?
It would have been more appropriate to put this before the FBI. We're talking about a new allegation that surfaced subsequent to the FBI investigation. And the idea that the Senate Judiciary Committee can rise to the level of the FBI when it comes to an investigation. Asking a question isn't enough. It's the follow-up and what that means. They don't make conclusions. That's true. But a thorough investigation talks about breadth and depth. And that's something that you frequently aren't going to see from a bunch of politicians versus people who are pros who do this day in and day out.
So now we wait to see what's going on. Republican says they will push through with a committee vote before the actual full Senate vote next week, probably. I know there were some senators that were concerned, some Republicans, that they really need all the members of their party to get this nominee through. What do you expect to happen here?
Well, we figured that'll take about 3 days. This will ultimately go to the full Senate. And you know there's going to be enormous pressure on all Republican senators to vote as a bloc. They're going to need just about everybody. My guess is that Pence will certainly probably have to come into play. The senators that people need to watch are likely going to be Collins, Snow, Murkowski. Those are probably the big three to see exactly what's going to happen here. Of course, on the Republican side, I suspect you're going to see the Democrats voting in bloc, in opposition. So that's what I would expect.
Any predictions?
I think in the end, Judge Kavanaugh will be confirmed. This is a political question at this point, and I think that those members of the Senate on the Republican side realize that this issue is about the midterms and about the general elections that will be coming up 2 years after that. But they might as well put somebody on the court. Otherwise, they look weak, and they already look weak right now.
Criminal defense attorney, former CIA operative Jack Rice. He was speaking with VOA's Lori London. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Press Conference USA. Next up, what's behind the Trump administration's proposals to reduce legal immigration and the number of refugees to the United States? We'll ask a former commissioner of the Immigration and Naturalization Service, Doris Meissner, now senior fellow at the Migration Policy Institute. That's Press Conference USA, Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is expected to make his fourth trip to North Korea next month, this time to arrange a second summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Mr. Trump, who chaired a U.N. Security Council session this week, said while global sanctions will remain in place against Pyongyang, he is hopeful a breakthrough will take place on denuclearization.
In June, I held a historic summit with Chairman Kim Jong-un in Singapore, where he reaffirmed his commitment to complete denuclearization. Last week, Chairman Kim reiterated that commitment to President Moon at their third summit and to me in a very strong letter form. I think we will make a deal. But unfortunately, to ensure this progress continues, we must enforce existing UN Security Council resolutions until denuclearization occurs. But most importantly, I believe that Chairman Kim Jong-un, a man I have gotten to know and like, wants peace and prosperity for North Korea. Many things are happening behind the scenes, away from the media, which nobody knows. But they are happening nevertheless, and they are happening in a very positive way. So I think you will have some very good news coming from North Korea in the coming months and years.
While President Trump dismissed any specific schedule, Korea Society's Senior Director Stephen Norbert tells VOA's Victor Beatty abandoning a timeline suggests Mr. Trump recognizes the complexity of the talks.
The administration has basically taken a tact of not trying to define it by time, but urging patience. So an incremental approach, and it seems to be one that allows for a commitment to denuclearization, but also for the North Koreans, you know, really to come to the table. It's a complex process. It may take time.
Mr. Trump, chairing the UN Security Council for a time on Wednesday, said many positive things are happening behind the scenes on North Korea, away from the media, and he also touted his very good relationship with Kim Jong-un.
The North Koreans certainly seem to want to make progress, at least as Moon Jae-in has expressed in New York this week. It's a process that seems to have some momentum.
How important was the meeting between Pompeo and his North Korean counterpart?
Significant in that it just shows that there is a communication that is open, that the South Koreans in particular have fostered, and that seems to have some durability. Both the U.S. president and the North Korean leader seem to need this process. The North Korean leader for economic viability and sustainability, which helps his regime. The U.S. president for a foreign policy victory ahead of the midterm election and for his own legacy. And South Korean President Moon seems to understand that. He's pushing hard this week in New York, now on his departure, having really laid a foundation for at least the next step, which would be a second summit.
Asked by broadcast interviewers if Chairman Kim agreed to allow international inspectors into nuclear sites, Pompeo said yes, while adding that verification is important in any nuclear agreement. Is this a key concession?
Oh, absolutely. And it's the biggest takeaway from the Pyongyang declaration, meaning the meeting between the South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. And clearly, the need to create a declaration of North Korean capabilities. Also, verification by international inspectors. And it seemed that Kim was amenable. So that is a huge takeaway, and something that the U.S. and the international community insist is of paramount concern.
Stephen, a lot has been said about what North Korea wants in return. Do we know yet?
Well, North Korea wants economic opening. It wants a back off of sanctions. And by way of that, it's seeking viability. North Korea wants to secure its regime, both through a security guarantee from the United States, meaning an end of war statement, also through the promise of some sort of economic benefits, investment in the United States, and certainly investment from South Korea, which seems bent given the improvements in inter-Korean relations.
Stephen Norbert is Senior Director at the Korea Society, and he was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. President Trump has put off a meeting with U.S. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. AP's Warren Levinson has the latest.
The president postponed the highly anticipated meeting to avoid conflicting with the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on the Brett Kavanaugh nomination. The meeting was set up after Rosenstein was depicted in the New York Times discussing the possibility last year of invoking the 25th Amendment to remove Trump from office. He denies this happened. Rosenstein also heads the special counsel investigation of Russian interference with the presidential election, which Trump unrelentingly criticizes. Trump says he prefers not to fire Rosenstein, but pushing back the meeting extends the uncertainty surrounding the Deputy Attorney General's status. I'm Warren Levinson.
Still ahead, how World War II bombings affected the ionosphere.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
U.S. Security and Exchange Commission, which among other duties regulates the American stock exchanges, has filed a complaint against Tesla CEO Elon Musk. That story now from AP's Ed Donahue.
In August, Musk went on Twitter to say funding was secured to take Tesla private, and he gave a share price. Musk has 22 million followers. The SEC is alleging that was a false and misleading statement. The complaint filed in Manhattan says Musk had not discussed or confirmed key terms of the deal, including price, with any funding source. The commission wants an order that would stop Elon Musk from being an officer or director of any public company, a stop to these kind of statements, along with repayment of any gains, as well as civil penalties. I'm Ed Donahue.
And still ahead on the program, the sounds of Shakira. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study by a pair of researchers at the UK's University of Reading suggests the massive bombing of Europe by Allied forces during World War II not only caused devastation on the ground, but also impacted the ionosphere as well. The ionosphere is the portion of the upper atmosphere ionized by solar radiation. Along with other functions, it impacts the global propagation of radio signals. The study authors reviewed records kept between 1943 and 1945 by the UK's Radio Research Center. These records contained the daily measurements of the ionosphere. According to the study, there was significant reduction of electron concentration in the atmosphere on the days when the Allies conducted their bombing raids in Europe. The study suggests that shock waves caused by the intense bombing may have heated the upper atmosphere, which increased its loss of ionization. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you here today. Now it's time for a little something from the world of music. Shakira is a Colombian singer, songwriter, dancer, businesswoman, and philanthropist. Born and raised in Barranquilla, she began performing in school, demonstrating Latin American, Arabic, and rock and roll influences, plus her dancing ability. Addicted to You was a big hit for Shakira after her first two studio albums failed to attain commercial success in the 1990s. She was daunted, but came back with tremendous success, selling tens of millions of albums. She entered the English language market with her fifth album, Laundry Service, in 2001. Its lead single, Whenever, Wherever, became one of the most successful singles of 2002. Also was a big hit for Shakira, and her fans love her performance on the harmonica. Asked to perform the theme song for the 2014 World Cup in Brazil after being tapped to record and perform the official song for the 2010 World Cup in South Africa, Waka Waka, This Time for Africa.
You're a good soldier, choosing your yourself up and dust yourself off and back in the saddle. You're on the front line, everyone's watching. You know it's serious, we're getting closer, this isn't over. The pressure's on, you feel it, but you got it all, believe it. When you fold it up, oh, oh, and if you fold it up, it's out. is Africa. Zami na mi na, eh eh. Waka waka, eh eh. Zami na mi na, sakalewa. This time for Africa.
Shakira's received numerous honors, including 3 Grammy Awards, 13 Latin Grammy Awards, and many more. She's married to Spanish football player Gerard Piqué, whom she met when he appeared in the music video for Waka Waka. They have 2 sons.
This is our motto. Your time to shine. Don't wait in line. Vamos por todo. People are raising their expectations. Go on our feet and this is your moment. No hesitation. Today's your day.
Yes, indeedy. That video you should check out for Waka Waka. Go to YouTube. It's there. Amazing. I've never seen so many people so festive. It's a great song. Hey, listen, everyone. Thanks for joining us here on the Voice of America for International Edition. Always good to have you here. Latest world news is straight ahead, so we hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Dave Magnus, I'm Steve Norman. We're all in Washington hoping you have a super Friday. Now a bit more from Shakira.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
This is Today in History. On September 28, 48 BC, the Roman general Pompey the Great was killed on the orders of the king of Egypt. Pompey had fled to Egypt after being defeated by Julius Caesar in the Battle of Pharsalus. The battle effectively ended the Roman Republic and ushered in the era of the Caesars. On this day in 935, Wenceslaus I, Duke of Bohemia, was assassinated, perhaps at the instigation of his own brother. The manner of his death and a reputation for kindness led to his canonization as a saint. He was posthumously awarded the title of king. Today, Wenceslaus is revered as the patron saint of the Czech Republic. In 1066, William the Bastard, later known as William the Conqueror, invaded England, beginning the Norman conquest of England. In 1871, Brazil enacted the Law of the Free Womb, granting freedom to children born to slaves. It was a major step toward ending slavery in Brazil, something that was accomplished in 1888. In 1919, race riots broke out in Omaha, Nebraska. A mob hanged the city's mayor, but he was rescued and survived. A rape suspect, Will Brown, was not so lucky. He was killed and burned by the mob. In 1970, Egyptian President Gamal Abdel Nasser died of a heart attack in Cairo. Anwar Sadat was named his temporary successor, but later that office became permanent. In 1995, Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin and Palestinian Liberation Organization Chairman Yasser Arafat signed the interim agreement on the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Under the agreement, the Palestinian Authority was given limited governing rights over some territory. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.